This is BBC Radio 3. It's 6:30 and time for tonight's Opera on 3. It's introduced by James Naughty.
Welcome to the Royal Opera House for a performance of Giuseppe Verdi's Macbeth. Jelko Lucic and Anna Netrebko lead the cast in Verdi's first excursion into Shakespearean tragedy, with Antonio Pappano, music director here at Covent Garden, in the pit. Ambition turned into madness in pursuit of power and fame, passionate lovers bringing destruction on themselves, the darkest forces at work in one of Verdi's most dramatic and atmospheric scores. In Phillida Lloyd's production, we'll also hear Ildebrando d'Arcangelo as Banquo, Yusuf Ejiavov as Macduff, and Konu Kim as Malcolm. Sergei Levitin leads the orchestra of the Royal Opera House, and the chorus, which plays such a thrilling part in this tragedy, is directed by William Spalding. We'll be hearing from Antonio Pappano in tonight's only interval, that comes after Act Two, about this score and about Verdi and Macbeth. The composer said, "This tragedy is one of the greatest creations of men." Well, with me here in our box at Covent Garden is Dr. Flora Wilson, Verdi scholar at King's College London. And Flora, we need to remember Macbeth was written in 1847, revised for a Paris production in 1865, and that's the version we're hearing tonight. Where do you think Verdi was on his musical journey when he first conceived and executed the score of Macbeth?
Well, in 1847, this was actually his 10th opera, which is extraordinary in a man who was still in his mid-30s at this point. He was quite a successful Italian composer by 1847. He hadn't yet made it sort of on the international stage. And what's really interesting about the opera we're seeing tonight in its two versions, and we're actually hearing the later version, is that by 1865, by that revised version, he'd made it internationally. He'd become the international figure that we know today. He'd been to Paris. He was really a different, more mature composer, and what we're going to hear is this extraordinary sort of mashup, if you like, of those two men.
There's also the question of his fascination with Shakespeare and the characters that he knew from Shakespeare's plays. Although he hadn't seen a production of Macbeth, I think this is fascinating, until after the opera was written.
This is extraordinary. Macbeth was not actually performed in Italy until after Verdi's Macbeth, the opera, was performed. It was partly on the back of the opera's success that the first productions of the play itself were mounted in Italy.
Well, we'll hear Acts 1 and 2, beginning, of course, with the witches waylaying Macbeth and Banquo, who command the army of Scotland, with their prophecies. Macbeth will be Thane of Corder, they say, and king thereafter, but Banquo will be the father of kings. When Macbeth hears almost immediately afterwards that he is Thane of Corder and that King Duncan is coming to his castle that night, he's driven by Lady Macbeth to kill the king and fulfil the prophecy. He takes the crown, and it is a time of blood. Banquo and his son must die if he's to keep it. But the child Fleance escapes when his father is murdered. By the end of Act Two, Macbeth is in torment. His kingdom is divided, and all his power is unable to prevent him being haunted by Banquo's ghost. The breakneck descent into chaos, brought on by the electric relationship between husband and wife, in thrall to the power of ambition, is as rapid in the opera as it is in Shakespeare's play. Here is the Russian soprano Anna Netrebko, tonight's Lady Macbeth, on how you have to sing the role.
The music is so violent from the beginning, and her line, vocal line, it's a killer. She's immediately going on a scale with two octaves up and down, and quite aggressive. You know, so it has to be violent, fearless, very cruel, and ambitious, of course. Verdi wanted not beautiful voice. And I tried to make it in several phrases very unattractive, especially in the low register. And then there is only few phrases when she is really trying to be kind, and you can feel something. Not kindness, but something different inside her besides only aggressiveness. This is the weakness about her. I mean, that's why it's called Macbeth, but not a Lady Macbeth, because he is a strong one. She's not. She was very strong at the beginning, and after that she kind of disappointed me, if I would say. Of course, she is suffering from what she did. That's why she's having all these nightmares, and that's why it's a pity to look at her in the end.
All that is to come. Anna Netrebko on Lady Macbeth, the character who so fascinated Verdi. Coming into the pit now, Antonio Pappano, music director of the Royal Opera, to conduct acts one and two of Verdi's Macbeth.
Thank you. una sordida barba. Ora io parlo.
Tu, al partici, o più di or so, a ma spesso lembio virtù d'averno parlai ti nanna veragine
in si promette la terra sotto che mi appanto
poi pare se si trova
quella vigna so che c'è sta la cosa che mi appanto la pare gentile
sento rizzarsi il crime
ma spesso legno spirito
pensi e di sangue d'onda sei nato
parlai ginganna veragine
alla corona della verità
del re mi salutaro sir di caudore vaticini uscito dalle veggenti stesse che predissero un serto al capo mio racchiudi in cor questo segreto Addio.
Thank you. Oh! mia, la sposa mia, che pronta appena la mia caccia notturna, o che un tocco di squilla a me lo avvisi. Sei tu, io ti brandissa, mi sfuggi, che pur ti leggo. A me precorri sul confuso cammin, e nella mente di seguir sol cruento mio pensiero le da forma, e come vega mi presenta allo sguardo una chimera. E deciso, e non cerco in vita, udirlo d'un cano, e squillo eterno, e nel cielo mi chiama l'inferno. Mia donna, pur, ecco mio rolinco in verso.
Oh, quel tempo re m'impose, e di ciò tarda è l'ora, qui m'attendete, o banco.
Thank you. respira tali donne, manco padre di regi andrò fetà. Dunque i suoi figli vengeran, un cano per costore sarà spento. Immortale non hanno.
Ma sì, non l'hanno.
Forza è che scorra con altro sangue l'anno.
Come, quando?
Al venir di questa notte.
Immoto sarai tu. Thank you.
usciam da queste tenebre. Un senso ignoto nascermi svento in petto, vieni Cristo presagio. Vedi sospetto. Come dal cielo precipita,
fuggi mio figlio a tradimento.
Thank you. io la togliere, cari ospiti amante. La mia consorte assina sì, e non a lei sorrettino, a via le piaccian pinti sì, sciogliere lo scotto.
A tuo regale, regale vivo, sacconda o mio signor.
Avello, mi se fanno volendo gli uccisi.
sgol nel codice di lì nel letto nascaletto muove lei d'orda lei se volerò io e stegni volete che ora
Oh,
The end of Act Two of Verdi's Macbeth, conducted by Antonio Pappano, with the Serbian baritone Jelko Lucic as Macbeth, the Russian soprano Anna Netrebko as Lady Macbeth, Ildebrando d'Arcangelo as Banquo, Yusuf Evazov as Macduff, Conu Kim as Malcolm, and Francesca Cegina as Lady Macbeth's lady-in-waiting. The orchestra of the Royal Opera House is led by Sergei Levitin tonight. The chorus master is William Spalding. Flora Wilson and I have been enjoying the spectacle of this familiar tragedy, beginning with the appearance of the witches. Verdi wanted a crowd, of course, not the mere trio that Shakespeare conjured up, preceded by that notably atmospheric and mysterious overture. Flora, that choral sound at the end of Act Two, it sums up what this opera is about.
It is fantastic, isn't it? I mean, this is the Verdi of the patriotic choruses that he'd been sort of producing in his other earlier operas, I think. And yes, the Royal Opera House Chorus are doing a fantastic job here tonight, and they really are needed. When Verdi first chose this subject, he said, right, we need to worry about two things. We need to worry about the chorus, and we need to worry about the stage machinery, because he was really interested in effects that had been used in British Shakespeare productions on the dramatic stage. He was actually sort of fascinated by the Banquo's ghost effects that had been used in London and reported back on the gauzes and things that were being used in theatres. But the chorus was crucial right from the start of his conception of this opera.
And I mentioned the witches a moment ago. From the very beginning, great crowd of them, and Fleance, Banquo's son, is helped to escape by a witch in this production through a little trapdoor, and then he gets out and goes off. And that sense of the supernatural, the unknown, which hangs over the whole play and the opera, is so present.
It is. It's absolutely crucial to this score, actually. It's very much a score in two parts. He said he wanted it to be noble and lofty, this music and this text, except for the witches, which needed to be sort of trivial but extravagant, he said. This sense of the supernatural as sort of not far off being funny, but in a very spooky, scary kind of way. The supernatural was really fashionable at this point in Europe, more in France and Germany than in Italy. And that was something that Verdi was sort of experimenting with here. And so his orchestration is really where you hear most of the supernatural in this score. It's a thing of many details. Every time you think that this is sort of settled into something like normal Verdian music, there are little shivers from the strings, something kind of weird happens. Something gives away the fact that this is not going to end nicely. In fact, we've already had two deaths and we're only halfway through. That this is a bloodthirsty opera and we're sort of careering along. And as you pointed out, the witches are sort of driving the thing. Verdi said there were three characters in this opera, three ones that really mattered. It's Macbeth, it's Lady Macbeth, and it's the witches. And they are absolutely crucial. He said they drive the drama, and they absolutely do, especially in this production.
You use that word nicely. It's very interesting. Remembering he was only 34 when he did the first version of this in 1847. We're seeing the later one finished for Paris in the mid-60s. He talked about Lady Macbeth's tone as not being nice, to go back to your word, but being hard, stifled and dark. Now, it's a real problem because it's a wonderful part. There are wonderful arias. Netrebko is singing it with extraordinary command. What did Verdi mean when he said he didn't want it to sound too good?
Yeah, it's interesting, this, isn't it? He actually went further than that. He said he didn't really want it to be sung at all in places, which is obviously a real challenge to an opera singer and is clearly not what we've been listening to tonight, per se. But what he wanted was a singer that put the drama first rather than the kind of conventional bel canto style that had reigned in Italy until this point. He wanted a singing actor, essentially, to be taking this part. And those words that you've already quoted, Jim, they were describing a singer who'd been touted as the best possible first Lady Macbeth, and Verdi rejected her in no uncertain terms, precisely because she was going to sound too beautiful and too angelic, and he actually said he wanted his lady's voice to seem diabolical. And I think Netrebko is really sort of going for something of that ilk here. We can hear her digging very deep indeed. This is a very sort of chesty performance, and she is sort of terrifying, especially from our spot just above the stage where we're so close to her. I mean, she sounds just sort of viscerally nasty from up here.
Viscerally nasty. Well, it all comes back to the score, of course, and let's hear more about that from tonight's conductor, the music director here at the Royal Opera, Antonio Pappano. I spoke to him during rehearsals about Verdi and Macbeth.
The colour of this opera, the tinta, this is a favourite word of Verdi musicologists, is very, very particular. The orchestra and how it supports the drama, I think is really a huge step for Verdi forward. It's funny, I don't think that he developed on from this enough in the early stages. He developed his incredible gift for melody, his incredible gift for great numbers and the declamatory singing. Here, though, it's all about color and atmosphere. And of course, only Shakespeare brought it out to that extent in Verdi.
In Otello and Falstaff,
of course.
Subsequently. One of the problems that producers have with the Shakespeare play is dealing with the speed at which Macbeth descends from apparent sanity in a position of power to madness. And the same problem obviously presents itself to Verdi. Musically, how does he cope with that?
Well, one of the engines of that are the witches themselves. First of all, Verdi had a choice. Does he use three witches, as it is in the play, or does he use a group, three groups of witches? Well, he made the latter choice. And their music, when they are alone, is really quirky and zany and bizarre, almost like a scherzo in a symphony. And yet, when they are with people, when they are prophesying, the music is very solemn and has full of menace. So what I'm trying to say is that you get a tremendous variety of tempo. So the action is always somehow being pushed on to the big set pieces. So the set pieces are always, and this is very Shakespearean, always set up by something a little bit lighter. Therefore, the tragedy is much more focused and falls heavier.
In the last act, we have Verdi at the height of his powers in terms of the way he writes for Lady Macbeth and Macbeth, don't we? I mean, leave aside the wonderful chorus work that's going to unfold in the rest of the opera. But those two great arias towards the end of the opera are really remarkable.
Well, the sleepwalking scene in terms of colour, muted strings, the calling of the clarinet, the English horn, which is a very unusual combination, and her broken up phrases. You have the scraping in the strings, that her scratching at her hands, trying to clean them. It's all very, very pictorial, and yet it demands from the lady really an ability to hold the stage and to really scare us and feel for her, believe it or not. And we do. His aria is much more conventional, Verdi aria, in the sense that it has one of these um-pa-ta-ta-ta-ta, accompaniments. But that's what makes it so pathetic. He's saying, I have no respect, no pity, no honor, no love, and my epitaph will be curses. So he feels sorry for himself. How pathetic is that for someone who's just become this animal?
And after the premiere of the first version, the early version of the opera in 1847, the crowd pursued him down the street with delight, didn't they? No much wonder.
Well, the Verdi-Shakespeare combination it's striking. There's just something different about it. There just is.
Flora Wilson with me here in the box, listening to Tony Papano there talking about the second part of the opera, which we're about to hear. He mentions the sleepwalking scene with Lady Macbeth, and it's fascinating to look back at the way that Verdi, when he produced his first version in the 1840s, was fascinated by this moment and demanded, very particular performances by the singers who would do it.
Yes, absolutely. There are tales of enormous numbers of rehearsals for that premiere performance. I think it got to over 100. He was so keen to be able to direct the singer in particular ways. I mean, I think what's really interesting here is actually the way that this scene, like Lucia's mad scene in Lucia di Lammermoor, this is actually framed by there are people on stage watching Lady Macbeth as this unfolds, which somehow ramps up the sort of the drama of everything that's going on, that she's introduced by her lady-in-waiting and by the doctor, who actually commentate to some extent what's happening.
And indeed, we've seen, in a way, Macbeth's mad scene, haven't we? Because that moment where Banquo's ghost appears, and I should say in this production, obviously people listening don't know this, but Banquo appeared physically. He was there in front. No one could see him except Macbeth. So Macbeth has had his mad scene. That's what it was.
It was.
Italian audiences would know that for
it was,
what it
absolutely.
Seemed to be.
It was a gradual disintegration of Macbeth's mental state, interpolated into this sort of horribly false drinking song, which Lady Macbeth is kind of pushing along. And I mean, Pappano's tempo there is so interesting because it's really quite slow. It's sort of exaggeratedly, stylishly slow, which really gives the sense of the sort of joylessness of this occasion. It's all about the juxtaposition in
and
this
then
opera.
He knows how to let the chorus here go, because
he certainly does.
They know him and he knows them. Talking about singing voices and what Verdi did, to what extent was he writing in the first version and again for Paris for particular voices and thinking of people who could do what he wanted?
For the first version, absolutely. He certainly was writing for those voices. I mean, actually, the reason he chose this subject at all for his opera for Florence in 1847 was because the baritone Felice Varese was available to sing Macbeth. And Varese was one of the star singers of his day. And that was immediately a big plus for this particular subject. It was then his lady, as Verdi called Lady Macbeth, who caused the problems for casting, as we've already discussed, this need for a kind of a nasty-sounding lady. And in fact, the originally suggested singer, Tadolini, was deemed too beautiful by Verdi, and he ended up with a woman who was famously unattractive and apparently had a very large head. But he was absolutely tailoring his writing for those singers. That was the convention at that time. And yes, we have to listen to this opera today as partly formed by the sorts of voices he had available at that time.
Flora Wilson of King's College London, my companion here tonight, thank you very much indeed. We do have two remarkable conceptions of character by Verdi on stage tonight. We're going to hear and watch that sleepwalking scene with Netrebko as Lady Macbeth, one of the glories of Italian opera from that period. But let's first talk about Macbeth himself. I asked Jelko Lucic to tell me what it was like to take on the role.
Well, I have to be really honest. If you know how to bring this character, then is a joy. If not, then is hell. And knowing that Verdi, for the first time to put on the stage and to play Macbeth, he was rehearsing with his Macbeth for 150 times, the whole opera, the scenes and everything, because he wasn't so satisfied with the way that guy sang back then. And why I'm telling this? Because the 80% of this opera is written in piano. So it's either you talk to yourself or to somebody in your imagination, but, you know, you really have to bring it.
It's interesting that you make that point because, for example, at the moment in the opera, as in the play, when you see Banquo's ghost and no one else can see him, you are, in effect, playing a mad scene, aren't you?
Right, yeah. From that moment on, I'm the only one who sees Banquo's apparition after his death. And that's the moment when I'm getting crazy. Those, of course, are parts which are not written in piano, you know, because I'm really completely scared and trying to explain first to myself what's going on, and then my wife's trying to just calm me down. And
of course, when you get to the point where the Queen is dead, the world is collapsing, the fates are moving in on you, you have a climactic moment in the opera, which is Verdi at his peak.
Yeah. That would be Aria in the fourth act, where I am actually alone with myself. Finally get to know that this is my scene, that I'm alone with myself. And I'm opening my soul and my heart and everything. So the aria is actually talking about the three most important things in life. That's love, respect, and pity, I think, pietà would be. So I'm human.
It is a very human story. It's an intimate story about the destruction of pride and the power of ambition, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but what I like to say always is, if you want to see the real character of the person, just give him the power, and you will see what kind of person that is. Unfortunately, I, as Macbeth, you know, belong to these people that didn't know how to use this, and it all went wrong.
It certainly did. The Serbian baritone Jelko Lucic, tonight's Macbeth at the Royal Opera House. So we move to acts 3 and 4 of Verdi's opera. Macbeth is driven to go back to the witches, desperate to look ahead and see what is going to come to him. They tell him to beware of Macduff, but they do appear to offer some mysterious consolation in his torment. He can't be harmed, they say, by any man of woman born, and he will rule until Birnam Wood marches towards him. But Macbeth then has another vision of Banquo, followed by a procession of kings, and he collapses in horror. The witches disappear into the night. He and Lady Macbeth resolve to kill Macduff, but he escapes to join Malcolm, old King Duncan's son, in rebellion. Sleepwalking, Lady Macbeth understands at last the horror that they've brought on themselves. News of her death reaches Macbeth as he realizes that his enemies are upon him. The soldiers in the advancing army take up branches for camouflage. Birnam Wood is indeed on the move. And in the final confrontation with Macduff, he tells Macbeth that he wasn't of woman born, but was delivered by Caesarian before his time. The witches were right. He kills Macbeth, and Malcolm, Duncan's true heir, becomes king. Remember, if you want a fuller synopsis and pictures of this production, you can find them on the Radio 3 website. Macbeth by Giuseppe Verdi is conducted by Antonio Papano, music director here at the Royal Opera, with Jelko Lucic as Macbeth and Anna Trebko as Lady Macbeth. Antonio Papano takes his place in the pit and acknowledges the cheers of the audience to welcome him and the orchestra. Acts 3 and 4 of Verdi's Macbeth.
infernal io vi scongiuro, ch'io sappia il mio destin, e cielo e terra può essere innovar l'antica guerra.
Se la colpo sospetto, solo un morto. Non c'è alcuna, non
giammai, no, giammai. Or mi dite, salire al mio sogno, la progenie di tanto lo fa.
Non cercarlo!
Voglio, non lo voglio, posso voi la mia spada calzare. Caldaia è sparito. Perché? Qual concento? Parlate, e va.
Oh,
superior. O mio terror, di franco stor. Perduto.
da quel tiranno tutti uccisi voi foste. E insieme con voi la madre sventurata.
Non avrò di figlia, figlio, non avrò di soglia, figlio.
Thank you.
due notti.
E questa apparirà.
Di che parlava nel sonno suo?
Ridirlo non debbo ad un che viva. Eccola.
Un lume reca sin man.
La lampada che sempre si tiene accanto al letto.
Sfrega la man.
La vuol si crede.
Thank you.
ciel profetato. Esser poi sanguinario feroce nel soldato di donna di no, non temo di voi, né nel fanciullo che vi conduce a fermar sul trono quest'assalto mi tenne. O sbalzarmi per sempre. Se pur la vita sento nelle mie fibre,
e suono e nulla di nota.
Sire, ma sire,
e tu, quali cuore,
da questa di mia nazione.
Dai deluso infernale presagio, Pilus Berto, la spada, il pugnale. Gode allarmi,
dunque armi.
Gode allarmi,
dunque armi.
La morte,
la morte,
la morte,
la morte o la vita.
Cuginato di donna, uccidermi non può.
Capo non sono, scappato fu dal serma ferro.
Cielo!
Thank you.
Macbeth lies dead. There is a new king. The tragedy is done. The end of Verdi's Macbeth from the Royal Opera House Covent Garden, conducted by Antonio Papano, with Jelko Lucic as Macbeth and Anna Netrebko as Lady Macbeth. The applause rings out from a packed opera house as the curtain rises on the stage and the chorus of the Royal Opera get a great cheer for that wonderful part in this production, so important in the unfolding of the story. The cast begin to take their vows. The servant, the assassin, the herald, Jonathan Fisher, Old Zetterstrom, Jonathan Code, the doctor, and Dama, Francesca Ciegina, and Simon Chibalmo. One by one, the principals. Malcolm, now wearing the crown, of course. Conor Kim, the new King of Scotland. And Banquo getting a special cheer, Ildo Brando d'Arcangelo. Ben Macduff, whose aria got such an ovation, Yusuf Izvazov, giving his applause to the Royal Opera Orchestra. And the two principals now, first Anna Netrebko, Lady Macbeth, waving as the cheers rain down from high in the opera house, and moving back to take her place with the principals in front of the chorus. As we await Macbeth himself, Jelko Lucic, who gets his cheer. After an exhilarating evening here, the principals move to the front of the stage to take their bows, holding hands and acknowledging the enthusiasm of this audience as Anna Netrebko moves to the wings and brings Tony Papano onto the stage. And he in turn brings to their feet the orchestra of the Royal Opera House, led by Sergei Lubitin, with the joy of playing that wonderful score. And the conductor brings the principals once again to the front of the stage. And with the enthusiastic audience here still cheering tonight's cast, it's time for us to leave the Royal Opera House. Our thanks to Flora Wilson, with me here in our box. We do hope you too have enjoyed this performance of Verdi's Macbeth. From Covent Garden, I'll hand you back now to Radio 3 for the rest of the evening.
And that was James Naughty. Next Saturday's opera on 3 is a performance of one of the greatest Russian operas, Eugene Onegin, Tchaikovsky's tale of unrequited love, in a new production by Scottish Opera from the Theatre Royal in Glasgow. Well, we've time now before the next programme to hear a piece for violin and orchestra by Tchaikovsky. It's his Valse Scherzo, played by Julia Fischer. Thank you. Fischer was the soloist in the Volksscherzo by Tchaikovsky. Yakov Kreitzberg conducted the Russian National Orchestra.